Welcome back to the deep dive.
Okay, so today we're digging into something huge, technologically speaking, but also, well, legally, pretty explosive. The launch of Sora 2, OpenAI's new video generator. And well, look, the output is amazing, almost unbelievable stuff. Our mission today is really to focus on the immediate legal chaos it's kicked up, especially around copyright, intellectual property.
That's exactly it. It's this real tension, you know. On one hand, people are calling Sora 2 like the most powerful imagination engine ever built. And honestly, it kind of feels like that. It can create almost anything you tell it to.
Right.
But then, almost the second these videos started appearing, these incredible, realistic videos,
Yes.
the big questions landed. Like, who owns this stuff? Who owns the style? And maybe most importantly, who owns the actual characters it makes?
Yeah, and our sources for this deep dive are mostly looking at the legal takes, the analysis, and some specific reports about OpenAI's whole IP approach here, particularly this opt-out policy everyone's talking about. It sounds pretty
Well,
wild.
it was. We really need to get into not just what they tried to do, but maybe why they thought they could pull it off, you know?
Definitely.
So let's start with the tech itself, the capabilities, and the kind of content that first set off all these alarm bells.
Well, what's really interesting, or maybe alarming, depending on your view, is how fast it just started spitting out famous copyrighted stuff. Like, that seemed to be one of the first things people tried.
It almost instantly became this, like, giant remix machine,
Right.
taking existing pop culture, existing IP, and just blending it.
Yeah, one source called it one big meme factory, essentially running on studio archives.
Yeah.
And specific examples, well, they started raising eyebrows fast. First, there was the remixing of like historical figures. Someone recreated a JFK speech, apparently. And then, maybe even touchier, a custom speech put into the mouth of Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah.
The AI was generating lines like, I had a dream that humanity and AI finally combined.
Oof. Yeah, putting words in historical figures' mouths is one thing. Ethically tricky.
But then it escalated pretty quickly when it started using major studio IP. That's where the legal red flags really went up.
And we're not talking like things that look like certain characters. We're talking the actual characters themselves, aren't we? From billion-dollar franchises.
Exactly. Specific named characters. People were generating stuff with characters from South Park.
Wow.
SpongeBob videos started appearing, and then a whole bunch of Pokemon stuff. Pikachu as a DJ. Apparently, someone made Sam Altman hanging out with Pokemon.
Okay, that's pretty specific.
Oh, yeah. And actual scene recreations, like a Minecraft version of the movie Interstellar. And then videos that observers described as, and this is a quote, definitely 100% Rick and Morty.
Right, okay, that's the legal core of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
This seems like the critical distinction we need to make clear for you listening, because older AI, say image generators, they often argued, sometimes successfully, that they were just mimicking a style. Like the style of an artist or a director, which is legally fuzzier, right? Different protection.
Right, style is harder to pin down legally.
But if Sora 2 is actually generating Pikachu, I mean, a specific, trademarked, globally recognized character, that feels like a completely different ballgame.
It's a huge leap, legally speaking, because think about it. If you ask an image AI for, say, a yellow electric mouse, you might get something that looks like Pikachu, but it's arguably derivative.
Okay.
But when Sora 2 apparently just delivers Pikachu, well, that suggests two things pretty strongly. One, it was almost certainly trained on actual Pikachu images, like the copyrighted stuff.
Right, the proprietary data.
And two, it can reproduce that specific trademarked identifiable character on demand.
Which really blows up the whole fair use transformation argument, doesn't it?
It pushes it much closer to, well, blatant reproduction, maybe even trademark violation, not just copyright.
So the tech itself, by being able to reproduce these characters, kind of proves the input data might have been, let's say, improperly sourced.
That's the implication, yeah.
And that leads us straight into the biggest storm around the launch this opt-out policy for the training data.
Yes. The policy that the Wall Street Journal reported on, which didn't go down well in Hollywood or anywhere else with creators, really.
Okay, so let's unpack that policy. The reporting suggests OpenAI's initial plan was basically to tell copyright holders, we're talking big studios, talent agencies, musicians, everyone, that they had to actively tell OpenAI not to use their stuff,
Yeah.
either in the Sora app itself or in the giant data sets used to train it, They were just going to assume they had permission unless someone specifically objected.
It just flips the whole burden, doesn't it? Normally, if you want to use someone else's copyrighted work, you ask. You get a license. You pay for it. Or, you know, you argue it falls under a specific exception, like fair use, commentary, criticism, parody, that sort of thing.
Right. Standard practice.
But OpenAI tried to flip it. They basically said, we're using everything unless you individually track us down and tell us no.
Hmm.
Imagine the burden on millions of creators trying to police that.
That is incredibly bold.
Hmm.
Especially for a company like OpenAI, they're not some startup anymore. They know how copyright works.
You think so?
Our sources had this amazing analogy from some lawyers. They compared the opt-out idea to a burglar saying he had the right to steal everything in your house because you hadn't explicitly told him to stop.
Huh. Yeah, that captures the feeling perfectly, doesn't it? That sense of violation. Like, this huge company is just going to build its product on your work, make money from it, and you have to do the work to stop them. And maybe you can't even find out if they used it.
But hang on, let me play devil's advocate for a sec.
Yeah.
The sources did mention the UK government sort of floated a similar idea, right, to try and boost AI development. Didn't pass, but
it was floated, yeah.
So isn't this aggressive move maybe partly about trying to keep up, innovate faster? Isn't the argument that needing licenses for everything just slows down progress too much?
That is absolutely the argument the AI industry is making. That speed requires breaking the old rules, essentially. That innovation demands this. Radical rethinking of IP law. But the counter argument from creators and copyright lawyers is that IP law exists for a reason, to protect human creativity, to incentivize it. When you try to just bypass licensing with an opt-out system, you're embodying that whole ask forgiveness, not permission thing.
Yeah.
Which is just not how copyright is supposed to work, certainly not internationally. OpenAI was trying to set a precedent that hasn't really flown anywhere else.
And they did backtrack pretty fast, didn't they, once the backlash hit?
Oh, yeah. The policy got pulled back quick. One source kind of joked. It was like, oops, my bad. Shouldn't have tried that.
Huh. But the intent was there, wasn't it? That initial aggressive stance was clear.
Absolutely clear. And that, I think, leads to the bigger question. Why? Why start with something so legally provocative? The analysis suggests it's really about the underlying drivers. Profit, massive growth, and this global race to dominate the AI space.
So the thinking might be, it's better to just forge ahead, build the tech, grab the market.
Yeah, do whatever you want now.
And deal with the lawsuits later. Treat them as just like a cost of doing business, something you pay out of the billions you're making.
That seems to be the calculation. You figure the market share, the revenue you gain by being first or having the best model trained on everything will eventually dwarf whatever you have to pay out in fines or settlements later. Litigation just becomes like a subscription fee for using the world's creative content, not really a deterrent.
A very expensive subscription fee, maybe, but yeah.
It's a calculated gamble in this tech arms race.
And it's not like this came out of nowhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our sources mentioned OpenAI. And Google, too, had previously lobbied the Trump administration, trying to get all AI training data classified as fair use.
Exactly. They've been pushing for a while to reshape the legal landscape itself, to basically make their current and past actions legal after the fact.
Because if all creative work, music, movies, books, art, everything can just be ingested by AI under fair use,
that saves the AI industry literally billions, maybe trillions, in licensing fees they'd otherwise have to pay. That's the end game for that lobbying.
So how does this Sora 2 situation compare to other AI lawsuits we've seen recently, like the ones against music AIs?
Well, I think the key difference is how blatant the reproduction seems to be with Sora 2, based on these early examples. Look at the suits against, say, Suno or Udo, the music generators. They're getting sued, sure, but those companies at least argue their goal isn't to just copy songs, but to make something new, maybe transformative, even if it sounds similar sometimes.
Right, they claim it's inspiration, not duplication.
Yeah. But with Sora 2, if it's generating, like we said, an exact Rick and Morty or SpongeBob, it's not just like the character, it is the character, a specific, recognizable, trademarked entity. That feels much more like direct, intentional copying, less like transformation, more like infringement.
So it seems.
Yeah.
Bolder, more direct and challenging creators' rights.
It feels that way, yeah. Much more blatant.
So the sheer audacity of the copying seems matched only by the sheer scale of the potential profits they're chasing. And they seem to view copyright law not as a boundary, but just an obstacle to get around.
That's certainly the narrative taking shape. It's just fundamentally easier, mathematically speaking, for these companies to grow incredibly fast and compete globally if they can just Use everything. Use the entire library of human creation without paying for licenses, whether they get explicit permission or just manage to create legal loopholes.
Okay, let's pivot a bit then.
Yeah.
Beyond the huge legal fight over who owns what, what about the impact on, well, on you listening, on society? What happens when video gets this good, this hyper-realistic?
Well, the immediate effect is this kind of erosion of trust, a crisis of trust, really. Our sources painted this picture. You're scrolling TikTok, Instagram, whatever. You see some wild video, maybe it has 10 million views. Like the example given was a super realistic cat hijacking a car and leading police on a chase.
Huh, okay.
Your first instinct, because video feels real, is maybe to believe it for a second.
Yeah, visual proof has always been powerful.
But then that thought creeps in, wait, is this just AI? And often there's no label, no disclosure.
Right, so the end result is just general distrust setting in. That feeling of, I can't really believe much of what I see online anymore.
Exactly. It forces you into this constant state of low-level skepticism. Mm-hmm. You have to keep asking yourself with compelling video content, am I being duped here?
That feels like it could undermine a lot, from just casual viewing to news politics.
Absolutely. If you can't trust the visual evidence,
yeah,
that has serious ripple effects.
Okay, but here's something fascinating on the economic side, that the sources picked up on how this impacts jobs. Not just taking jobs, but creating new ones too.
Yes. That's a really interesting angle. The job market is definitely shifting. We're seeing these completely new roles pop up, like AI prompter or AI curator.
Yeah. Yeah.
And often these roles seem to be emerging where traditional creative roles used to be. Think graphic artists, maybe commercial photographers, potentially even social media managers who create visual content.
So the skill set changes dramatically, right? It goes from needing years of practice in, say, lighting, composition, using specific software,
deep technical craft,
to being really good at describing what you want to the AI.
Yeah.
Prompt engineering becomes the key skill.
That seems to be the trend. It potentially devalues those deep, specialized creative skills in favor of, well, quick generation based on verbal instructions. Power shifts from the person who can make the thing, the artisan, to the person who can describe the thing effectively, to the machine. And the sources suggest this could really hollow out a lot of mid-level creative jobs pretty quickly, like in the next few years.
So let's try and tie this all together then. We've got this incredible technology, Sora 2, capable of generating amazing video, undeniable.
Yep.
But the whole debate it's forcing is really about priorities, isn't it? Is it okay for massive corporations to prioritize speed, convenience, and profit over the fundamental system of intellectual property that's meant to protect human creators and let them make a living?
That's the core conflict, precisely. The Sora 2 launch, and especially that initial opt-out policy attempt, just threw that conflict into sharp relief. It's forcing this public showdown over whether our current copyright laws can even cope with AI developing this fast and this boldly. The law just seems way behind the tech right now.
So what does this all mean for you listening to this?
Mm.
Well, this legal fight isn't just about Disney characters or song rights. It's really about setting the rules for how creative work, maybe even your work, is valued in the future. It defines the future of digital creative work.
Mm-hmm.
So here's something to chew on. If the argument holds that AI companies feel it's easier to grow, to compete globally, by essentially being allowed to, quote, steal whatever they want from all the human creators.
Yeah.
What's the real price we pay for this amazing AI video? Is it maybe the slow undermining of human creativity itself is something valuable?
A big question to ponder, especially next time you see a video that looks just a little too good to be true.